Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
And now, upset that the domain name buttsitter.com had already been purchased by yours truly, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a warm Friday. Beautiful day here in Kansas City. And kind of feels like, a free football weekend, right? When the Chiefs don't play till Monday, it's like, yeah, get things done. Watch whatever game you want. No pressure, no stress. And then the Chiefs will get at it on Monday.
Second time in 3 weeks we've had a free Sunday.
Yeah.
I like
it. It is. Remember when the Chiefs used to play every game Sunday at noon?
Oh, those are the good old days, right? No, not really.
What do we say that there's only five
yep.
noon Sunday games? Now, of course, some of those are just West Coast, but most of their threes are 3:25s, which are the standalone, or not standalone, but the number one game, the national game in the afternoon. They've only got five noons.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're always going to have a few because of the West Coast, playing right. in the West, but they've got 3:25 games against teams that would normally have been at noon. I mean, not just non-primetime games, but games they want to get late, like the New England games, a 3:25 game, and that would, in the past, probably would have been a noon game. So it's primetime plus whatever the best part of the day is on Sunday. When you're the champs, man, they want to put you in front of people.
They're not playing the NFC West.
Right.
So there's the three AFC West road games. That would be, back in the day, when they stink, there's like 13 noons.
Right.
And three yes. threes when you're on the road in the AFC West.
Only the compulsories, only the ones you have to have.
Yeah, right? This is what you get. You get, and frankly, it does make it a little bit tougher, right? Coaches like that routine. And you got to get out of your routine a little bit here. So Chiefs and Ravens, we're going to talk about it here in a little bit with Lewis Riddick from Monday Night Football. He handles the analyses along with Brian Griese in the Monday Night Football booth. Of course, former personnel man for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's scheduled to join us in our next segment. Danny Unleashed in the 3 o'clock hour. We'll talk to Danny Klingscale. He's brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Joe Spiker and his great team at Easton Roofing. 2-minute drill. Coming up at 4, we'll go around the country talking to the people, covering the stories where they're happening, brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. As you're getting to Twin Peaks for happy hour, we'll be getting to the 2-minute drill. Adam Teicher in the 4 o'clock hour. We're going to drop by Todd Lebo, or I guess maybe Lebo will drop by us. He's going to be at Protein House, so if you want to go see him. Nate was there this morning. Todd Lebo there this afternoon from 4 to 6. We'll check in with Todd in the 4 o'clock hour. In the 5 o'clock hour, we'll get you the things you need to know. And, of course, Kevin Harlan will be with us. The great Kevin Harlan joins us in the program. Not calling the Monday night game.
Nope.
Not calling the Monday night game. They said he shows too much favoritism towards the Chiefs.
He's in too good of shape.
Yeah, too good an announcer. They think that they don't want to overshadow what should be the best game of the year. No, he actually welcomed his second grandchild. So how about that?
Fantastic.
He is working Sunday, but he asked for Monday off, and then he was planning ahead, but then the baby came a few days early, so. I guess you can't juggle those TV lineups that fast.
No. Oh, second thought, I'm good.
Yeah.
That didn't work in his business.
Or, you know what? I'll do Monday. Somebody grab Sunday. Yeah, it just doesn't work like that. So we start with a little Chiefs football, some of the conversations that were had today over at One Arrowhead Drive. And the it is amazing because there's a whole weekend of football, and ESPN – they know what they've got. Like, they've had some dogs on Monday Night Football, right? Some absolute dogs in the last few years. They know they've got a gem here. They're already is a guy who pretty much has ESPN on in the background all day long. There, you'd think that the Monday Night game's tomorrow. The way that they're already talking about it. They had a mic'd up segment. Like, oh, we get mic'd up with Lamar Jackson. I'm like, oh, this should be interesting. Let's hear what went on in that Texan game. No, it's all from last year.
Oh, wow.
It's just like anything to put this matchup front and center, they're going to do it. So they grabbed a mic'd up couple of different games that Lamar Jackson was mic'd up in, and from last season, because it's cold, right? He's got the long sleeves and the turtleneck, and you can see the breath and everything. And like it's like, oh, that's the Brown. That's not this year's game against the Browns. That would be last year's game against the Browns. So, you know, I think it's ESPN knows exactly how big this game is, and it's a matchup of, you know, arguably the two best teams from last year, even though Baltimore got bumped out. They had the one seed. It's a matchup of two undefeated teams, two teams that are the favorites again this year, two great young quarterbacks, the last two reigning MVPs, the reigning Super Bowl MVP. It doesn't get any bigger than this. What I've been impressed with, I don't know about anybody else, is the fact that I think Lamar Jackson's gotten even better as a passer. And he was pretty damn good last year. By the way, he led the league in touchdowns last year with 36. And then he rushed for, how many more did he rush for? He rushed for another...
eight? Or was it more than that?
Well, why would they put... No, that's advanced passing, sorry. Playoff passing, adjusted passing, rushing, receiving. Here we go. He rushed for seven more.
Seven.
1,206 yards and seven touchdowns on the ground. Through the air, he amassed 3,127 yards and 36 touchdowns. So 43 touchdowns all total, 4,300 yards all total. And I wanted to know this year, I mean, the guy's been 20 of 25 and 18 of 24. Completing 78% of his passes, right? That's like next level stuff.
Even in the modern day NFL where, you know, 30 years ago, 60% passer was considered accurate, even in the modern day NFL, the numbers he's putting up are pretty amazing. And it seemed like the first touchdown drive they had in their opener, he almost threw it, overthrew a wide open Mark Andrews in the end zone and thought, phew, I don't think he's missed a pass since then.
Yeah, it has been impressive. I asked Steve Spagnuolo, Chiefs defensive coordinator, today, as he was made available to the media, if Lamar Jackson looks even better on tape this year than he did a year ago.
He looks tremendously. I don't know, better. I thought he was pretty good last year. But look, here's a guy that has a real strong arm. I tell you what, he puts the ball, he throws a ball where they can catch it. I'm really impressed by when he's throwing to that tight end, especially on crossing routes, and he's got a tremendous deep ball. I don't know where it comes from that he's not a passer, et cetera, et cetera. I think sometimes that happens when you're such a dynamic runner. But listen, he can throw the ball effectively, and we know that.
Now, I do want to point out that, you know, 3,100 yards passing, you're like, well, that's not that much. Yeah, they did run for over 3,000 yards as a team as well. So
200 a game.
There's only one football. There's only 60 minutes. There's only so many plays. They're advancing the ball down the field. But to me, the key stat with him is the fact that he's accurate, that he is, you know, delivering the football where it needs to go. This year, four touchdowns, no interceptions, so he's on pace for 32 touchdowns. So he's right at about his pace from last year. I think, though, and I said this yesterday, I'll buy that they're all in on him as a passer when they don't run him 16 times.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is, you know, they're exposing him to a lot of hits. You know, Patrick Mahomes ran how many times last week? You know, five maybe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, something along those lines. And the question was asked today, and rightfully so. I'm not panning the question. Like, hey, I can't remember if it was Nate Taylor or who asked it, but asked Bieniemy, or maybe it was Teicher. It was Teicher.
Yeah.
Asked him, hey, listen, how many times, you know, what advice are you giving Pat when he takes off running there? Because, you know, the implications being that, hey, you don't want to get the guy hurt. By the way, he ran six times for 54 yards. You know, to me, yes, there are times that you escape and go someplace, but he ran the ball 16 times. You don't run the ball 16 times unless they want to do that. And I'll believe that Baltimore is sold on him as a passer when he doesn't run the ball 16 times. That's great that he does it, but let's be honest. The modern game, throw to win, run when you're winning. They do it a little bit different, but they do it a little bit different because they think they need to do it that way because they're still not bought all the way in on him throwing the ball. There's no doubt that running the ball is going to get him exposed. And was he 100% in the game against the Titans? I don't know. I know in week, 16 or 17, he limped off the field. Mm-hmm. So I you know, he better be getting better as a passer, because the longevity of a runner is just not there. And if they, you know, this time next year, if he's going to be enjoying, you know, his first month on a new 160, 170, 180, 250, 350 million, $400 million, so maybe he's going to top Patrick Mahomes if he has another monster year, $500 million contract. If he's going to be doing that, they're going to have to be calling off the dogs on running him, because you are not running him that much is not saying we want this guy to be our franchise quarterback for a long time.
No, and I mean, to your point of him running so often, they run him so often because he has a unique skill set for that position. But if on any given play you think your offense is better with your quarterback running the ball by design than passing it, it goes to what you said. You don't think he's a great passer. Or else you think your offense is better with him throwing on that particular play.
Or you're just stuck in the dark ages, and you've come up with a super creative run game, and you think that's the best way to win games.
Yeah, which doesn't really seem to me to sound like what Baltimore, they're pretty, seem to be pretty progressive as far as finding new ways to win. But, yeah, he's not going to last at 14, you know, 10 to 15 carries a game by design.
No, and so that's something to watch as Baltimore evolves. But they'll be willing to run him against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I heard, I don't know who it was, one of the daytime anchors, they were, again, talking about the Chiefs and Ravens on ESPN, and he's like, I like Baltimore. They're just nastier. Okay, so did they just get nastier? Or did nastier not work each of the last 2 years when these two teams played?
Yeah, I think that's just, I guess it's pack mentality to a degree. Once someone says, oh, the Baltimore Ravens, just the city itself seems more gritty, I guess. I don't know. The uniforms, who knows? I mean, how many factors go into that mindset? But once it's established, people just go, oh, Baltimore's just a nastier team.
Yeah.
And people just run with it.
To me, that's what you say when you don't really know.
Right.
Well, they're tougher. Oh, okay. So the Chiefs not? No, the Chiefs are tough too, but they're tougher. So, like, what is it like? They're gonna get into a see who can punch who in the gut the most times before they fall down is gonna be what decides it.
Yeah, who?
I always like that. And listen, I think toughness is a part of the NFL. I think there are teams that are tougher than others. My point just is, I think that's you know, just lazy analysis. Not this guy was just, you know, signing off to a break or something. So I'm not trying to rip this guy. Mm-hmm. If anybody happened to be watching the same thing, and I don't even know who it was, to be honest with you, but my point just is that those are the kind of things that, like, at the end of the day, I like Baltimore because they're tougher. Well, you can like Baltimore because you can say, okay, here's a fun stat for you, the Kansas City Chiefs can't cover anybody out of the backfield.
No,
right? So I'm not down with that. You want a reason? Like, okay, Lamar Jackson's completing 78% of his passes, and when Rashad Fenton is targeted, he's giving up a perfect passer rating of 158.3. When Ben Neiman is targeted, he's giving up a passer rating of 149.3. I think the Ravens have the running backs that they can get into the backfield. They got a great passing attack to their running backs, and the Chiefs have not been able to. Ben Neiman's their cover guy, and he's not covering anybody, and their corners are thin. Marquise Brown can really go out there, and Rashad Fenton's going to have to play, and Lamar Jackson will note where he is every time he drops back. By the way, if Antonio Hamilton were out there, he's given up a 118.7 passer rating. And then somebody else was over 100 for the Chiefs, but was it? I think it was, Daniel Sorensen, 118.7 as well. So if you want to say, okay, well, we can throw the football on the Chiefs. You can certainly throw it on a coverage, and it's why we'll come back. And I think we're going to be saying until they get their corners back, and Charvarius Ward has been on the practice field, it should be pointed out. The only guys who did not practice today, Alex Okafor and then Dorian O'Daniel, got injured in practice. And so Dorian O'Daniel's not at practice today. Sammy Watkins is out there in a limited capacity, but he's still in the concussion protocol. So he has not yet passed the concussion protocol, but he has been freed to probably do non-contact work at practice today. So, you know, bottom line is, like, that to me is a reason. If you want to pick the Ravens, okay, there's a reason to pick the Ravens. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, Ben Neiman's numbers are going to get better because he's not going to have to cover Austin Eckler all the time. But the Ravens have really good tight ends. And
including one of the best in the business.
Yeah, Mark Andrews. And, you know, so much so that Hayden Hurst, who was like a second-round pick for them, they traded away because of Andrews being so good. But they you know, they're going to be able to attack the Chiefs' defense. What point total wins this? Well, I'm just trying to get a feel for what kind of game.
To be safe, it's got to be 31, 34. I think both teams are going to score some points. So I'm guessing if someone gets to 34, I'd say they probably win. I don't see 38, 35, but.
Okay. If the Chiefs defense could step up and have a big day in this one, it's going to say a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to say a lot. Let's hear Eric Bieniemy. I mentioned about the running because I think this was an important, a really big part of the game. We asked it of Andy Reid. Get Eric Bieniemy's thoughts on the advice he's throwing around to Patrick Mahomes. He was asked what he tells Mahomes when he takes off running.
You know what? I'm satisfied with what he's doing. I mean, he's doing a good job because they're doing some things in coverages and then mixing it up. And when they're doing that, he's maximizing the opportunity because there's not a whole player spying him. So if he sees a lane, he takes it. Kudos to him. And also, too, he made some huge runs that helped us down the end to put us in position to have a chance of going into overtime and also winning the game as well. So you never want to take that part away from him. The thing that we need to do a better job of is just keeping him upright, all right? And like I said, we got to make sure that the five guys up front are doing it the right way. But also, too, Pat got to be accountable by making sure he's taking the proper footwork. And then all the other supporting players, whether it's receivers with their routes, with timing, or backs, and or tight ends involved in protection, we got to make sure that we're collectively getting it done. So when it's all said and done with, like I said, we didn't play a clean game last week, okay? But I will say this. I got to show some grit to get it done. And that's all you can ask for, okay? We'll clean up the details. That's why we're involved in practice. This week, we got to finalize some things over the next couple of days, but we're looking forward to this challenge.
I like what he said. He got into a lot of different things. The original question was about giving Pat Mahomes advice about running. And the six carries for 54 yards, I think, was one of the most important parts of the game against the Chargers. And I think that I think he's going to have to run against the Ravens as well. And I think there are going to be routes. And he mentioned no spy, right? They're not putting a spy on Mahomes, and so he knew he was going to get at least a free exit coming out. If he could get by the line, he was going to have a free exit, and it was going to be up to people to get their heads turned around and come and make the tackle. I think that is a big part of the game, and I think it's something that Andy Reid, you know, I don't know if it was maybe it was poor blocking, and Mahomes couldn't really get set to where he could take off and get his eyes down the field. He was always trying to evade in the backfield. But, you know, everything started clicking when he started running. And I think that's one of the things, you know, you don't have to run the ball 16 times like Lamar Jackson. But I think one of the things that makes Mahomes super effective right now and enjoy it and use it while he's got it, because at age 31 or 2 or 3, somewhere in that range, it's not going to be there. And that's not going to be a facet of his game that he has. And you're going to have to go about doing things a different way. So while he's got that and he can scoot, then I think you want to use that, and I think it puts a lot of pressure on the defense. And if they've got to commit to leaving a guy in the middle of the field to spy on him, then, you know, there's no reason for the array of receivers that the Chiefs have for somebody not to be open on every play.
Yeah, and that's what makes it because he's so good at not only seeing while he's running, not only seeing the open receiver, but being able to put the ball in a spot where only his guy can catch it. I mean, when you see what he did last week against the Chargers, I mean, there's really no way to 100% on any given play think you've got the Chiefs' offense sewn up, because he literally can do anything from any spot. And when you said the footwork thing, I've heard a little bit of talk last week. Is he talking about maybe him the deeper drops? You know, that was – That kind of became an issue again. People were talking about it against the Chargers last week. Same thing as last year. Is he going too deep in the pocket?
That was one of the questions. I haven't noticed that. I heard that and I was like, well, I know that was the theme last year. That was Rob Collins from Four asked that. And I remember that was one of the things, you know, Seth Kizer was talking about, that he was protecting the knee. I didn't feel like that was the case. In fact, I saw him stepping up a lot against the Chargers. I don't know. Did you think that was going on?
No, maybe it just seemed that way on one or two plays. Maybe it's just the fact that their edge rushers last week were just so good that it seemed like, oh, my God, there they are again. I mean, they were so good at getting around the tackles that maybe it just – maybe I was imagining that. But it seemed like on one or two plays he was a little deeper than he normally is.
Yeah. I mean, I'd buy it, but part of that – I do think some of that's like, hey, get the blocking going.
Yeah.
You know, let him feel confident that he doesn't need it. I mean, that there was a lot of reason to believe on every snap, you know, he had one eye down the field and one eye looking where he was going to escape because they were coming, and they weren't really keeping him out of there. So, I don't know. I do think the run part of the quarterback is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
It opens up so many different things, and I expect to see it against the Baltimore Ravens as well. But he's got to get down, I think, which is kind of what Adam Teicher's getting at. Is like, okay, you run and then you get down, but you know, he did kind of stay up. You know, he's almost falling down as he completed the 22-yard run on 3rd and 20 because I think he started to think about sliding, and then he went, oh, wait a minute, I got to get this first down. And so he was kind of awkward, and he tried to make a move. He's more graceful than the way that thing finished.
Yes.
You know, more athletic than the way that thing finished.
Changing his mind in the middle of a commitment, and he was somehow able to get it done. It actually, to some degree, shows the athleticism to be able to do that. I'm sure a lot of guys would have, had they made that mind change, would have looked a lot less graceful than he did.
Yeah. So I think it's something to look for in this game. We'll talk about it with Lewis Riddick, handles the analysis. We'll be on the call on Monday Night Football for ESPN. He's scheduled to join us next here in the program. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The program proudly brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 and Tiffany Springs. The moment you step in the dealership, you'll know your family at Worth. Rick Worth and his great crew, Chris Guerin and all the guys and gals do a fantastic job. Anything you need, any Harley, anything that goes on your Harley, anything that goes on you when you go on your Harley, it's at Worth Harley-Davidson North. Find them online at WorthHarley-Davidson.com. Let's talk some Monday Night Football. Lewis Riddick joins us from ESPN, their Monday Night Football analyst. Lewis, welcome to our T-Mobile guest line. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. And looking forward to this game. This is, beggars can't be choosers, right? We're all thrilled that the NFL has done such a great job in getting things up and running, kind of like this game later in the year. Just maybe more would be riding on it. We'd know more about these teams, but is it a little, maybe going to be a big letdown after this game's over? Because this seems like the best game that you could possibly, the best matchup that you could have all season long.
Yeah, this is a darn good one, isn't it? It's I think I'll take it no matter when they play it, you know, because these guys are must-see TV, and it's not just the quarterbacks. There's just a lot of playmakers, a lot of speed, a lot of coaching intelligence, a lot of team building intelligence that's going to be on display Monday night. And it's definitely a measuring stick for both of these teams right out of the gate in the first month of the season. It's probably going to have, you know, implications as far as seeding down the road, being that, you know, and that carries even more weight now with just one team getting the bye. So yeah, there's a lot riding on this game, you know, even though it's early on, and I think both of these teams recognize that. Both of them are aware of it, and they know this is a heavyweight fight. I mean, they played, previously in these 2 years down in Kansas City, and they have all been heavyweight battles. So this will be another one.
Does the fact that the Chiefs have won the last two, and these really the Lamar Jackson era games, they've won both of them. Does that play an advantage for either side, either revenge for the Ravens or confidence for the Chiefs?
Well, I think obviously, you know, for the Chiefs, it gives them a sense of, look, we know what we're dealing with this football team, although they have upgraded in Baltimore for sure as far as the speed on the defensive side of the ball, particularly at linebacker for sure, and how on offense, you know, they have, it seems like, a never-ending line of runners that they can throw at you at the running back position in addition to Lamar. Obviously, you know, with Marquise now, they have someone who is just getting even better at wide receiver. And with Devin Duvernay, they have someone who they've added there. Mark Andrews continues to shine with that connection with Lamar. And Lamar himself, I think, which is the biggest factor, is a guy who has totally, totally upped his game to an even higher level as far as throwing the football. So, you know, I think for them, for Baltimore in particular, I mean, it would be nice to kind of break this streak, I'm sure, and, you know, say, look, we've lost these guys the past few times on the road. We'd like to get them here on a big national stage. So, yeah, it's a motivating factor, but I think if I had to pick, I'd always want to be the team that has won two already against the team and kind of have that kind of psychological edge going into it.
The Chiefs always seem to end up in kind of rock fight type games with the Chargers, so I don't want to make too much out of that. And they've got a lot of great defensive personnel as well, and that's how those games kind of go. But I'm curious, and you, of course, were worked with Andy with the Eagles and the personnel department. Is he so good that he can, you know, win a couple of football games in the NFL, which and Andy talks about it all the time, how precious wins are and how hard they are to come by and everything that goes into it. But is he good enough that he can actually hold some stuff back in these first couple of games and we're going to see a whole new wave? Like, this is kind of his coming out party in this game. He was able to get two wins without putting everything out there.
You know, I think, you know, that's a good question. I just don't necessarily buy into that, only because you only have 16 cracks at this thing, and coaches have so much respect for, you know, the old any given Sunday type of theory that I don't think they really do hold things back. And in this environment this year in particular, the first month of the season is probably more important than it's ever been, simply because you don't know what your team is going to look like come November and December based on, you know, the environment that we're living in now with the pandemic. You just don't know. I mean, you can do exactly everything in your power to make sure that you're doing everything right and trying to keep yourself healthy, and all of a sudden something could pop up and totally change the entire complexion of your football team. So I think all coaches are now playing every game like it's the absolute biggest one and emphasizing getting a fast start. So I don't think Andy is holding back anything. I think, you know, naturally their offense is evolving, and I think when you watch them play on offense in particular, they do new things every week. I mean, there's a couple staple things that they like to do, but every week they're unveiling something new. And that's kind of a luxury that he has when he has number 15 at quarterback. Like, the possibilities are limitless. You can draw up things in the dirt like you were playing in your backyard and go, hey, Pat, can you throw this one? Can you throw that one? Could you throw it 75 yards behind your back between your – I mean, there's just so many different possibilities. I think you're going to see new stuff, but that's just going to be the natural evolution of this offense.
Yeah, and maybe new stuff because it's new matchups, and so right, that matchup exactly requires this new stuff. I'm curious on Lamar Jackson. You being in the personnel game, I've talked to a lot of personnel guys. I know – you never want to put a ceiling on a player. You've got what you think he's going to be, and there's an upside and a downside to what the player can be. I felt like when they went for Lamar Jackson, what they were saying is kind of what the Chiefs did with Patrick Mahomes, in the sense that, hey, most Super Bowl champs these days are quarterbacks on their first contract, so they're cheaper. You find a really good one, and then they're not sucking up all the oxygen in the salary cap, right? And so you can have a better team all around them. And there was a little bit of that, and then a little bit of like, hey, we can – pitch backwards, right? We can throw this run option at people, and we can be the one that's different. And I almost felt like they were running him so much early on that it was just like, hey, we're gonna take him through this first contract. He's probably gonna be all beat to hell, and then we'll just walk away and we'll move on to the next one here. Now he seems to be throwing the ball so well that you have to respect him as a passer. 78% completions here to start the season, led the league in touchdown passes last year. Some of that's scheme driven, I know, but I'm curious, are they really confident that he's going to be a great passer as long as they keep running him 16 times a game?
Yeah, I you know, I'm not going to speak for them, you know, in great detail, but I think philosophically, I think, you know, how they brought him along was how they needed to bring him along based on what he did well at the time and what was yet to come, meaning so they weren't going to do as much about, you know, with the stuff that was still in development for him. Now, obviously, do they want to expose him to all those hits for a sustained period of time? No, they don't. And I don't think that was ever the plan either. I thought they felt, you know what, obviously we're going to have to weigh the risk of exposing him to those kind of hits while we're developing him as a passer. But as he starts to pass the ball more and more effectively, we won't have to run him as much anymore. And he won't feel like he has to run as much anymore because he'll feel as though he has more stuff in his toolkit. And he's showing you that now. And, you know, I used to talk to Steve Young about this all the time on the set of Monday Night Countdown. because he was the same way when he was younger. You know, he said, look, I used to rely on my legs all the time. And once I was able to truly develop as a passer, that's when you become like the ultimate weapon. Because now you can do the defenses whatever you want. If you want to take away my legs, well, you can't really always take them away. But if you want to try and threaten me that way, I'll kill you from the pocket. And if you don't, you know, if you want to let me get out on the perimeter, then you know what I can do to you out there. And once you do that, now you're on your way to doing something special. I think Lamar's on his way to doing something special. And look, he's never going to, and he doesn't have to. And then let me preface it by saying this. He doesn't have to look like Dan Marino. He doesn't have to look like Warren Moon throwing the football. He has to look like Lamar Jackson, which right now is good enough to be basically, at the start of this season, the second best passer in the NFL, and last year be an MVP. And that's pretty darn good. And right now, I mean, he looks better right now through the first 2 weeks than he did last year. And if he can continue on this trajectory, I'll tell you this, not only would I be wanting him for his first contract, we'd be talking about his next contract the same way they locked up Pat and Casey and locked up Deshaun in Houston. He's going to get his too. And John is on to something. Yeah, they have an offense now that is so difficult to prepare for and makes coaches kind of like do mental gymnastics getting ready for them. And then when you throw in his development as a passer, hey, the sky's the limit for this kid. It really is, and I wholeheartedly believe that. And I don't think this was like something that was just going to be like, hey, let's use him up until he has nothing left, and then we'll just move on to the next. I think this is a long term play for them, as it should be.
John Harbaugh is obviously an accomplished coach. He's got a Super Bowl championship. I think it's one of the most impressive Super Bowls because he didn't win it with a Hall of Fame quarterback. Most Super Bowls are won with Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Is he, you know, when you talk about the great coaches, John Harbaugh's name never comes up. I think he's wildly underrated. I mean, again, it's not that everybody thinks he sucks or anything, but I don't think he gets the credit for how good he's been. I mean, going toe-to-toe and beating the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger, you know, winning road playoff games. I mean, he's a coach's coach, isn't he?
Absolutely. In the profession, you know, where, you know, substance over style is what really matters. And I'm saying, like, within the profession, when these guys are talking amongst themselves about who are the great coaches, who are the great innovators, who are the great leaders and disciplinarians and teachers, John Harbaugh's name is always at the very top of the list and at the forefront of the discussion when these guys are talking about the game. And I think his background actually helps him as far as how he is able to teach, communicate, lead, correct, earn the respect of players, because being a special teams coach, we've heard it all the time, how they deal with the whole roster. That helps him. Some coach, he can talk the language of the offense and the defense and the special teams. Quite honestly, some head coaches can't. Some head coaches are really just glorified offensive coordinators. That's what they are, or defensive coordinators. And John's not that. And he has total command of what is going on the field and off the field. He knows exactly what he's looking for in a player. He has a great relationship, obviously, with Eric DaCosta and Ozzie before that, and with ownership down here. He's set up for the long haul too, and Baltimore should be very, 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 very fortunate and happy that they have him.
Lewis Riddick will be on the Monday Night Football call for ESPN, does a great job breaking down the NFL. We're big fans of yours, by the way, here across the station, Lewis, and we're very happy
that you
got that spot there on Monday Night Football. Let me give you my final four quickies, one or two words only for the answer. Mm-hmm. I'll start you with this. If you're going to start a franchise, Mahomes or Lamar Jackson?
Mahomes.
Okay. How long do you think Andy Reid will coach? How many years?
Let me say 5.
Okay. Who's the greatest Pitt Panther?
Tony Dorsett.
Yeah, I thought that would be the one. And is Eric Bieniemy a head coach in 21?
Without a doubt.
Yeah, I think
locked.
So too.
I mean, that's a lock.
Yeah. Yeah, it's overdue. Yep. Lewis, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate it. Have a great call on the game. We'll be watching.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Lewis Riddick from ESPN. Great football mind, great experience, and does a great job breaking it down. Always enjoy talking to Lewis Riddick from ESPN. Of course, you can watch it on ESPN. You'll hear it here on your home of the National Football League. Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night football. It's right here on Sports Radio, 810 WHB. All right, thanks to Lewis Riddick from ESPN joining us in our last segment. Great talking football with Lewis Riddick, and very happy for his success there on the Monday Night Football. I think he's – I like Lewis Riddick in that slot. You like him?
Oh, he's fantastic. Steve Levy's a good nuts and bolts play-by-play guy. The first week, it seemed like there wasn't much of a – I guess a chemistry between the three of them. Brian Greasy just kind of seemed like he was trying to get his points in, and it didn't seem to flow very well. It was better last week. I'd be happy with Levy and Riddick just as a two-man booth. But if they're going to have three guys in there, I think Riddick's fantastic.
I don't know why, you know. Listen, I think Peyton Manning would be fantastic if they got him. And if you go for Peyton Manning, you know, he rolls solo. I don't think you're going to do two guys. If you want a three-man booth, I have nothing against Brian Greasy. I don't think Brian Greasy sucks. I don't think he's, you know, the best out there. But I don't think he's bad by any stretch of the imagination. I think Lewis Riddick is really good. You know what I'd love to hear? I'd love to hear, and I'll go you a step further. I like Steve Levy. I think he does a really good job. I think he's got a little sense of humor. He keeps it light, but he's always prepared. I think he can call the action. If you can call hockey, you can call any sport.
For sure.
Now, you may lose your mind trying to slow down to the pace of baseball after calling hockey, but, you know, I think he does a fine job, and I like him, and I'm with you. I think there's chemistry to be had with him. Why haven't they put Randy Moss in that booth?
I don't know. I really don't know. We were knocking around who we thought should be in some of these booths. He was a guy that you and I both thought would be fantastic.
Don't you think Riddick, Moss would play great off each other?
Yeah, and that's the thing. When the three-man booth, it isn't so much that the two guys have to connect with the play-by-play guy. They got to connect with each other. One of the things, my favorite three-man booth of all time was Dick Enberg, Phil Simms, and Paul McGuire. And the reason why it was good is because Simms and McGuire had the little thing going on, and Dick Enberg would just jump into the play-by-play, and the other two guys kind of played off each other. And they don't have that yet. I think Moss and Riddick would be fantastic as that duo next to a really, really good play-by-play guy like Levy.
Jaworski and Gruden, you could tell they got on each other's nerves. Mm-hmm. Like, there was not a, you know. I remember one time, it was like when Darren Sproles was blowing up. I think it might have been the game where, that was late in the season, where he set the record for most yards, you know, combined yards in a game. But it was a Monday night game, and he was playing for the Saints, and his first year with the Saints, and he was having a big day, catching the ball. He had a big kick return and had run a couple of times. You know, it was just having one of the classic Darren Sproles big games.
Yeah.
And Gruden, like early in the year, at some point must have said something to the effect of, like, I think Darren Sproles is going to be one of the most important free agent signings. And he started at the beginning of that game, talked about it. They covered it. Then with every play that he would make, Gruden was like, I mean, that's just one of the best. I mean, that's the best free agent signing. And by like the beginning of the fourth quarter, Jaworski's like, yeah,
I get
it. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, he's one of the best. Like, I don't know if Jaworski had said, like, you're overrating this guy early in the year, or there was something, but Gruden just kept going at him with that. And by the fourth quarter, you know, Jaworski's like, yeah, covered. Yes,
exactly.
Acknowledged.
And, well,
you know,
to talk about the importance of the two and three guy, what's the original three-man booth? What's the one? It was Frank Gifford, but what did everyone watch? They tuned in to watch Don Meredith and Howard Cosell. And that chemistry. And it's always been the second and third guy. And if you don't have that, you don't really have there's no point having a three-man booth if the number two and three guy don't play off each other well.
Yeah, they've got to be able to. It can't be, you know, running a basketball drill where the middle guy's, you know, passing from left to middle to right to middle to left to middle to right. You can't go like that. Sometimes, you know, the outside guys, right, the two color guys got to go back and forth without having to have the play-by-play guy jump in and hand the potato back and forth to whoever's going to talk.
Yep.
And you know, I think Randy Moss is one of the most enjoyable guys to listen to. I think he's one of the most knowledgeable guys to listen to.
Yeah.
And his life story, his background, where he's come from, to me makes him so relatable to so many people, right? Randy Moss is iconic in the African-American community, and you know, because so many people can identify with his path, his story, and why he's so diverse and so thoughtful. I just cannot figure out why. Maybe he doesn't want to do it. You know, maybe they've urged him, and he's like, I don't want to be flying all over the place. You know, I don't want to do that crap.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know where he makes his home. You know, if it's New York, then I guess that's easy to sit there and be in the studio for ESPN. I doubt it's Bristol, Connecticut, though.
No. Yeah, there's two guys I really, really want to hear going forward as being analysts, and one of them, unfortunately, is still playing, and that's Philip Rivers. I think the minute he hangs him up, someone should snatch him up to be kind of the Tony Romo, only with more personality and a bit of a twang. I think he'll be an immediate star if he chooses to do that, which he might not. And the other is Randy Moss. I think there's two guys with it could be the top two guys a decade from now.
If I'm wrong about this, next thing, and I've said this before, so this isn't new territory, but this it fits what we're talking about right here. If I'm wrong about this, I'll admit it, because I was wrong about Herm Edwards. I thought Herm would end up being corny and get old, and I love Herm. And covering Herm, and I used to do stuff for the Chiefs website when they were really just kind of growing the website, and I got great access to Herm Edwards and his coaching staff, and so I have tremendous respect for all those guys and all the great work that they did, because I really think his 06 season was one of the best coaching jobs people have seen in a long time, because that team had no business winning 9 games, and I know it was kind of a fluky year that 9 was good enough to get him in the fluke final season, but that was a hell of a coaching job from Herm, and then the talent was just on bust. I mean, he got the empty tank from Dick Vermeil. Dick got out at just the right time. And so I think Herm's a much better coach than his era here would lend you to believe. And I know how hard he worked, but I also know what a class act he is and talking to him up at the stadium and stuff. So I loved Herm the guy, but I really thought he was not going to be good. Right? I thought it was going to be cheesy and he was just going to fall on catchphrases all the time and never
Talk
really
about
that give
shield.
You anything. Yeah, and never give you anything, because what he really wanted was back in the game. Like, Bruce Arians sucked.
Yes.
And if you watch Bruce Arians on the behind-the-scenes stuff, you're like, this is going to be the greatest guy ever. He's going to be fantastic because he's sharp. He's sharp-witted. He's got a silver tongue. He'll you know, just tear at you. And you thought, okay, he's going to tear these games apart and be like, what the hell are they doing? Instead, it was like he was auditioning for the head coaching job of every team that he was – that he was watching.
They stuck him in the booth in that game against the Cardinals here at Arrowhead back when Mahomes went past Lynn Dawson for the touchdown. He was in the booth that day, and I remember thinking, I don't hear it.
Yeah, no, it was not there. But the guy that they think that who is it that signed Drew Brees? Because that is going to bomb. Like, I'll admit it. Like I said, I missed it on Coach Edwards because he was very good. But Brees is going to be a bust.
He's going to be Joe Montana.
I mean – Exactly. You know who else was about? What do you think of Tony Gonzalez?
Pretty stiff. I mean, he kind of blends
cliched.
In. Yeah, he's as one of five, just doing highlights. It's okay. He gets in and out, but there's no reason to go, well, I want to hear what Tony says.
Yeah. I you know, to me, maybe he'll grow into it, but there's kind of that still, like, I remember him making everybody wait had to wait for him to go through his whole routine of getting dressed and everything and all this. And then he'd finally turn around and be ready to speak. And everyone was sitting there waiting because you had to get Tony Gonzalez's quote. I think he feels like, you know, whatever comes out of his mouth is gold.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to really work at what it is. I mean, I don't ever really hear him analyze anything, you know, so kind of disappointing for Tony Gonzalez. Looks good. Good looking guy.
Always will be that.
Speaking of good looking, Danny Unleashed, the Clink, next.
All right, three current Big 12 schools have not produced a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Name two of the three. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.